From the Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew, chapter 11. Now when John heard in prison about the deeds of the Christ, he sent word by his disciples and said to him, "Are you he who is to come, or shall we look for another?" And Jesus answered them, "Go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, and the lame walk. Lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, and the dead are raised up, and the poor have good news preached to them." My favorite hymn as a child was the one we just sang. I love to tell the story. It was hymn 326 in the old red service book and hymnal in the Lutheran Church from the 50s. And my church had boards that told what hymns we were going to sing. And when I would come in, I would look for 326. And it didn't happen very often, but every time it did, it was a little bit special. And I don't know whether it's prescient that I would become a storyteller, but that's essentially what happened. And it goes to the text about the power of stories. John is confused. Are you the one? And Jesus says, go tell the story. The blind see. Lepers are cleansed. Miracles happen. If I believe anything at all, I believe miracles happen because of stories. The stories of which we are a part, the stories we tell, the stories we live. So I have a few stories this morning. Stories of Jesus and his love that I believe have brought forth in their own way something of miracles. I'd only been here about a year, and in that short time I had come to know and love Minnie and Brian Jay's son, Brian Williams III, Lee's dad. And his life ended far too soon because of cancer. But I knew him through that too, and learned a little bit of life and love even as he endured and fought. And one day he and his friend were in Lubbock for chemo. And Brian had a relatively new pickup, and I had some stuff to do where a pickup would have come in handy. And so I just said, "Hey, can I borrow your truck while you're in chemo?" And he generously said, "Of course." So I took care of that, and that took longer than I thought. And then I had a quick errand to run on the Tech campus, so I parked illegally on the campus with his truck. And that took longer than I thought. And so when I came out, I backed out of the parking spot and hit the brake kind of hard, and out from under the seat rolled a, I guess you'd have to say half full or half empty, bottle of J&B Scotch. And I'm on the Tech campus, illegally parked. So I go, "I'm going to put that in the glove box." So I put it in the glove box and noticed a 9mm pistol. And that's when I learned that apparently whiskey and firearms come standard on Texas pickup trucks. I'm driving the truck back to the hospital. I can use this. So I met Brian, you know, where he was, and he was concerned I was a little bit late. And I just lied through my teeth. I said, "Well, you know, it took a little longer than I thought because I didn't have a parking sticker. And the police officer I was conversing about this with, it took a little longer to talk out the bottle of scotch on the floor. And then he found the firearm, so I was delayed." And by this time, Brian is... And then I just gave him one of these, and he knew he had been had so badly. And there's not a lot of laughter in the chemo room, but that day, everybody else, I think, thought the two of us were nuts. And laughter, you know, lightened the load just a little bit. Well, now, when you let it be known that you were willing to punk someone in a chemo room, word gets around. And what goes around comes around, as it were. And we were having, I think it must have been a high school graduation where there was a sheet cake. And my first mistake that day was to fairly forthrightly claim the corner piece of the cake, which has a lot of frosting, right? But the biggest mistake I made was making that claim standing right next to Mike Mitchell, who gave me a nickname that day that stuck for quite a while. And interestingly enough, over the years, when I heard, "Hey, corner piece," it kind of takes some of the pressure off of what is truly a soft spot in my psyche. I am prone to self-indulgence. Under pressure, I will claim an unreasonable sense of entitlement. But laughter takes some of the pressure off of the soft spots in our makeup. And that's what that did for me. I was talking to Iris Truelock this week and talking about this, and she said with a laugh, "Well, I guess you won't be preaching about forgiveness anymore, will you?" And it turns out that hearing about forgiveness all the time has hit kind of a soft spot in Iris's psyche, which makes her exactly like all the rest of us. It's not easy to hear about, you know, try forgiveness. It's hard. Yes, it is. But, you know, Iris and I laughed about, "Oh, you're not going to preach about forgiveness again, are you?" for many, many years. And it took some of the pressure off that soft spot that I think we all share. And just this week, she said, "You know, I think I'm coming around. I think I've turned the corner on that." And she wasn't laughing, but because we had laughed for so long, you know, she turned the corner. I think that those are stories of Jesus and his love. Every story of laughter and love is a miracle. And I think that's the first way those stories work to bring about hope and healing. Stories of Jesus and his love through laughter. And it is more broadly based than that. It's got to be 10 or 15 years ago that, again, I was going home from Tech and past Covenant Hospital, and I remembered that Joe Smith, our friend from the Disciples Church, now Partner Church, was having very serious heart surgery that day. And I thought, well, I'll just stop in and see how he's doing. And it wasn't in a room yet, so I went to the surgical waiting room, which had been invaded by disciples and Presbyterians and all manners of others from this town. And Jack Alexander was holding court in the middle, because we had all just heard from the surgeon, or they had all heard from the surgeon, that the surgery went well, Joe was fine, and it really looked like this was gonna do what they needed it to do. And Jack was just circling the wagons, as it were, and I joined in on this very heartfelt prayer of thanks for God's presence and healing grace in the hands of the surgeon. And I felt that's what the body of Christ is. The wagons circling and going to where Jesus would go and touching those to whom Jesus would reach with literally our own hands and our own feet. And doing so in a profound way through the sharing of prayer. Now, just individually and collectively with many of you, there are hundreds of stories of wagons being circled around all manners and arrays of issues and transitions and concerns. And every single time, the telling of the story, "We thank you, Lord, for your presence." It's a miracle. A story of Jesus and his love through laughter and also through prayer. I will tell you from deeply and profoundly powerful personal experience that it is when the day is low and emotions are high, it is uncommonly comforting to know for sure that someone somewhere is praying for you. You don't know who, you don't know where, but you know it's happening, and it helps. It's a story of Jesus and his love. It's a miracle. So we have a little church history. We have sort of the essence of church ministry. And I have another story that involves a look forward. If you are the pastor of a small town church and you have a family of nine, much less a second one, you have hit the lottery in terms of hope and energy. And Eric and Sarah and your family were a part of us now a couple of years. And I remember when we first met, we just came in and I was excited. And I may have been a little overly excited because I remember especially Aubrey, who was four at the time, now six. I think the first time I caught Aubrey's eye, she had gone behind her mother and was doing one of these, you know. And our relationship has evolved, let's put it that way, and evolved, you know, with some deliberateness. And it took several weeks, months maybe, to get out from behind, you know, the well-warranted safety of Mom and, you know, eye contact. And more weeks and maybe months where a wave was returned, you know. And it's only been a couple of months, maybe three, that I took my shot. Aubrey came in with the family, and I just went and like the, you know, and after many children's time, you know, and we just did that before, fist bump. So we're evolving, and it's a work in progress. And to me, that is a look ahead. That is a look ahead, because she has learned that there is reason to be here. And it just might be safer than I thought. So there is hope for all of us. And it goes really to the one and only story that matters of Jesus and his love. And that is what it means as we experience it. The love that it took for him to go to the cross, spend the time in the tomb, and overcome death, and create for us his body. I've been doing something for 20 years or so in the context of weddings, where I've used a little science and a little spirituality to try to make a point. I've called it the prism bit. And what I do is take a prism, and in the middle of the wedding, allow the couple to open the gift, which is great, and which is the prism, and then go through the science for just a second. That a prism is sort of a science lab that takes ambient light or sunlight and refracts it into its constituent parts. White light we take for granted, and yet it is all the colors of the rainbow, and the prism shows us that. And the analogy is that just as white light is the sum of all colors, love is the sum of all feelings. Now, I wish I could take credit for that, but it's just St. Augustine's insight that the opposite of love is indifference, which says that the opposite of love is no feeling, and the fullness of love is all the feeling. But nonetheless, the point I make in the middle of weddings is that that's what you're signing up for. You are signing up to experience the fullness of feelings, and not all of them tickle. And a lot of them will cause you pain. And the only way you get through the pain is to know that that's part of the love, and that's the love you share. And somewhere after sort of coming up with that way of explaining that, I've put a prism, and they've been here for several years, over each of the doorways here. There's a star prism, okay, call it the Christmas star if you want to, at the back door. And over here there's a teardrop, and that sort of makes sense too. And the message that is intended is sort of the message Aubrey seems to be getting, you know, that no matter what you feel, trepidation or even anger and guilt from, you know, some of the rest of us, those feelings belong here. That is the ultimate story of Jesus and his love, is that who you are, what you feel, matters now and belongs here, because it will be met by the story of the one who went to the cross and through the tomb and beyond to create us, of us, a body. The storybook of the stories of this church and this community, well over 100 years old. And it has been the highest honor of my life for 23 and a half years to have my name in the storybook as pastor. And today we turn the page. And there are lots of pages left and many stories yet to come. And as we turn that page, it is my fondest hope that my name stays in the book and that I'll always be your friend. And may the Lord bless us and keep us. The Lord make his face to shine upon us and be gracious to us. May the Lord look upon us with favor, and through the stories of Jesus and his love, give us peace.